As you've noticed already, these calls are very informal. We usually before 2, if you come in early, we talk about the weather and what's happening, and we like to find out who's online, and if anyone's got some gossip or something, it's a good time to talk about that. Sometimes these calls, I would say we've done about 203 of these calls, and eventually they get sabotaged. Someone will put us on hold, and there's music on hold, and it blows the whole call away. Sometimes, most of the time, it works good. Usually, we'll in 200 calls, we may have had 3 or 4 or 5 sessions that we had to either reschedule them or if the line went dead. And we use conferencecall.com. It's free actually, and you can call from any phone, anywhere. We've had people call in from phone booths or at meetings, and they've called in. We had Art Shanks calling from US 5 in California, tooling down the highway to give his presentation. So, as I said, it's very informal. The main objective is to get together and to talk about things and share ideas. Some of the things are instructional, so we got this talking head going on sometimes. We try to intermix with our instructional calls. We try to have grantees talk about their program. For example, Janet and Evelyn will likely be talking about the incredible program they have in Santa Fe. It might address a particular issue about curriculum or recruitment, what they're doing. OAI said they would like to present, and they'll be probably talking about maybe recruitment, but also about how this program has led into other opportunities. So we're going to be talking about topics, but more important, we're also going to be talking about, and if you are on a speakerphone, those are kind of tricky because you might have to, don't put us on hold. You could put us on the #6, which is mute, because these speakers are so sensitive that they'll pick up anything in the room. So we ask people not to try to put us on speakerphones. So we're going to mix it, but primarily what we're going to do is prep everyone for this RFP when it's coming out, and we're going to be talking about that in a second. And what we want to do, we have a twofold mission. One is to help new communities decide if this is something they want to do, develop a job training program for environmental technologies. Or once you get the grant, which we hope we can coach you along to make your odds better in responding to those grants, because we've been through 20 of these grants. We kind of know the do's and the don'ts and the landmines. We'll coach you as we go along in these PLCs. Once you get the grant, hopefully we're going to do a lot of peer-to-peer learning through annual meetings. Those of you who have been to the all grantee meetings or even continuing on the PLC calls, we try to exchange ideas of what works, what doesn't work, stay away from this, be careful of these types of students that may torpedo your program, those types of things. So as I sum that up, it's an informal discussion with some do's and don'ts, but also preparation for this new RFP coming up. With that, and thank you, Heather, for reminding me about the recording. That'll be up on our website, and we also have post-session notes. And so on Friday, we send out session notes that have links to job opportunities, funding opportunities. So you really don't have to take too many notes at all in these discussions. So we'll have links to everything, and we usually add additional information that we may not have discussed during the day. So you'll get the notes on this one on Friday. And if you don't get the notes, well, Heather, why don't you go ahead and explain to people what they should do if they may be getting announcements. We've got two listservs. They may be getting your listserv, but we have a special PLC listserv for those. And most of you are probably on that. If you don't get notes, send your contact information to Heather. So with that, I'm going to turn this over to Heather on what's going on.
All right, so just about what you guys would probably expect, there is no news from HQ. And so with that being said, we know that this is kind of a high stress, high anxiety time of year to be having, limited personnel in the EPA office. So we just wanted to reassure you guys, we kind of have our ear on the ground. We're trying to, you know, keep our ear out for any type of information that might be able to come in and be relevant to you guys. And obviously we will share it out as promptly and quickly as we can if we do hear anything from anybody at HQ. And again, we'll do that through a couple of different ways. Probably the biggest one is I would send something out through the listserv. So the listserv is if you've received, even this morning, an email from me reminding you guys of this fantastic PLC call. That's our standard listserv that we have. We also have an additional listserv that Mike was talking about, and this is specifically for the PLC community. And so it's a smaller one, but this would allow you to get an additional reminder from, it would come from Mike Sinew's email. And so you'd get the reminder from him, as well as a copy of the notes sent to you on Friday. Otherwise, all the information comes up on the website, and you can get it there too, but this is a nice way to get it promptly sent into your email box as soon as you would like. And you can request to be on any of them or all of them if you just send me an email to hkballou@eicc.edu. Again, that's hkballou@eicc.edu.
Great, great. Again, anything that you need a question about, you could send that to Heather. And if you have a question regarding something we talked about, or you could either we like to have it go through Heather, and we'll find the answer from you from EPA, or it might be something we're familiar with, and we can discuss that. Heather, anything else in terms of what we're doing these days in HMTRI?
Well, I did want to take a time to remind you guys. I know we're sort of in that limbo phase where we're waiting for the RFP to come out. So I wanted to remind all of you guys on the PLC call as well about the fantastic resources we have available on the website. So that's the brownfields-toolbox.org. It's just what we refer to the Brownfields Toolbox. That's the website that we're referencing. And I wanted to remind you guys that underneath those headings that we have on this website, we've got a couple of fantastic resources that you guys might be interested in. You know, there's the Start a Program tab, which really goes in-depth on those of you that might be brand new to this type of program. What are some things you could expect? What are some things you could look on? Hopefully some of these you're already thinking about, but it would be a great way to go through and review them. And then for some of either those of you that might be veterans at this process or the new ones as well, you go under the Downloads tab. We also have the Brownfields Best Practices. This was a document that Mike and actually Glow, who is the person in the position that I'm in now before me, Glow really worked very hard to try to capture, you know, what's the best of the best, what's the things that those exceptional grantees have been doing, and they were able to get that distilled down into a really fantastic resource. So please feel free to check out that Brownfields Best Practices. Again, you could reach that through the Downloads section on brownfields-toolbox.org. And then also at the very end, there's also the PLC. Recordings and notes are also found on that website too. So if you want to have a refresher on some different topics that we've talked about or listen again to any of the PLC calls that you might have participated in the past, go ahead and check out that section as well.
Great. Also up there, we have this other publication called Connect. It comes out every other month, and it usually addresses a particular topic. I think the last Connect was talking about getting ready for the RFP. We've had them, all sorts of discussions, assessments, and our Connect issue usually mirrors the PLC notes and explores up to some of the topics a little more in detail. One of the things, there are little hidden gems that are on that website, it's called the Certified Employee Finder, only because we haven't figured out a better name for it. Bruce is spending the last couple months collecting this data from our grantees. And these are, it's a scan of what are you teaching, when are your graduation dates, what's your contact information. And if you have a chance, you might go to the website and click on that, particularly if you're new. And it's it's a neat way to find out what other programs are doing. What courses are they putting on? How many cohorts they have, who to contact, that type of information. It's really the formal reason for developing this is to send this to employers, potential employers, to find out who to contact in case they need some people, what the context of active programs. But we found that it has another use that's very useful, is to find out who's teaching confined space, or who's doing lead, and how many are doing lead and asbestos. And of course, they're all doing 1910-120, but you get an idea of different parts of the country, some of the ancillary courses and supplemental courses that they're doing. Again, it's a little informal document. We don't get response from everyone, but Bruce worked pretty hard to get as many of our grantees on there. And many of the grantees are fluid because, as we'll discuss later, PLCs, a lot depends on needs assessment and the types of courses and training that the employers are looking for. Well, let's talk a little bit about, and this is for the benefit of new people, what's going to be happening, what has happened in EPA, and particularly with this shutdown, and what's happening in particularly with the funding of the Environmental Workforce Development Job Training grants. Environmental Workforce and training in EPA is not like any other labor training program. It was designed it goes way back to CERCLA and the Superfund. There was a little provision in there that allowed to train people to protect themselves and to remediate hazardous Superfund sites. Over the years, that was way back in last century, actually. It kind of morphed into, they found that there was a need for some sort of remediation and cleanup, not in Superfund necessarily. They weren't as bad as Superfund, but they weren't okay. So the Brownfields Revitalization Act in 2002 allowed EPA to, and there was money appropriated to develop a kind of a second tier, not the worst sites, the Superfund sites that are really nasty, but the 450,000 other sites, the gas station on the corner that's got chain link fence around it, or the dry cleaner down the street, even the perceived sites that we're not sure. We know that there was a paint factory or lead acid plant, but we're not exactly sure, or it's abandoned property that some people just walked away and there's drums on that site. It couldn't classify it necessarily at this point as a Superfund site, but it was nasty and nobody wanted it around. Mayors love this program because the purpose was to take unproductive property that was being abandoned and off the tax rolls to figure out a way of cleaning it up, passing legislation and laws that allowed people who cleaned it up not to take responsibility if they didn't pollute it, and clean it up and turn it into parks, to solar farms, to productive use, and land that now is usable for collecting taxes. So it was a very popular program. So that program went for a long time. It's 2002, and then the last couple of years, they felt they really had to reauthorize this program, and this last year in March 2018, as part of this budget compromise was developed, they created the BUILD Act, and it's a acronym for Brownfields Utilization Investment and Local Development Act. And how they got that acronym, I don't know, but they worked hard on it, I'm sure. But the BUILD Act, and you don't want to confuse it with the BUILD Act of the Department of Transportation. They have their own BUILD Act, but this is EPA BUILD Act. And in that act, they allow very specifically the cleanup, the allowance of being able to provide funding for assessment of property so you could find out what's on that property, the cleanup of that property, the revolving loan program, and it allows for, they used to be called ARC grants, where the EPA would give close to different years $100 million to these communities to assess, find out what is brownfields, what's really bad that be considered a brownfield. And it also allowed for technical assistance and training. And it allowed for training people that could work in these communities, and it was aimed at underserved communities. And the idea was to provide training and jobs to people that lived in the community that was affected by the pollution or the perceived pollution. And that's kind of where we come in. And that's, you could see, it's not just a flat-out job training program from Department of Labor. It's a very specific EPA program. And there are two things, and this is, as you go down the hierarchy of EPA, you've got the Bureau of Land Management, and we're under a group as you go down the hierarchy of EPA. It's called OBLR, Office of Brownfields Land Revitalization. And in this office, there's two sides of it. There's what they call Technical Assistance to Brownfields. That's called TAB, which you'll hear about TAB. And these are some are universities and some are not, four organizations that are supposed to help communities apply for grants to clean up their community. In other words, they're out there to provide technical assistance on how you could write a grant to do one of these assessment programs or how to do one of these cleanup programs in your community. They felt that it was just difficult to say, okay, here we go, write a grant. And EPA has some very specific expectations of these grants. So they formed these four entities that provide technical assistance to brownfields communities. And then they had the other side of the shop, and that was the technical side. They're doing the cleanup. They're doing many of the things that Janet does at Santa Fe. They're doing heavy-duty, hands-on cleanup programs. The other side of that shop was, well, this is supposed to be done in disadvantaged communities, environmental justice communities, where there's a lot of pollution and not a lot of services being provided. And, of course, when you overlay health, cancer rates, and unemployment, they overlay pretty well one on top of the other. So the idea being is, let's do something for the community for a change. They've been victimized several times. First, pollution came in with the manufacturing. Then the factories moved out. The jobs left. And now they've got left just pollution. Well, the idea is maybe we could help the people that live in that community get those jobs to clean it up. And interestingly enough, when we did focus groups early on in this program, there was some backlash to this program. They're saying, okay, you polluted our community. Now you want us to clean us up and get hurt. You know, so you want to victimize us again. Well, it's not. It took a while to realize, no, we've got very strict health and safety rules. These are good jobs that could lead to better jobs and be some of the best jobs you're going to have in your community and safe. So that's where we come into the Environmental Workforce Development Job Training Program. There, of course, are many brownfields, 450,000. There are fewer grants to clean those up. There might be a couple of hundred grants every year that are given out. There's about 120 assessment grants, only about 40 cleanup grants that EPA funds. And that helps communities develop these cleanup plans. Of those, there's even less job training grants. Usually about, in the past, it's about 15, maybe max out of 20. But the program is slowly growing. And the environmental workforce grants are to set up training programs in the communities that need help, where we could take people who need jobs, and if they were trained, they could get a really good job cleaning up, working in the technology side of environmental remediation, and then progress from there. And that's where we're at. That's where we're standing right now. These grants, for those of you who are new, and it's going to be changing a little bit, they're $200,000 grants. They're meant as seed grants to get things started. And as we'll explain as we go along, the idea originally was you get you start out with a seed grant of $200,000, and then you start getting leveraging from different agencies, and it might lead to a bigger grant or another grant. OAI is an example of a program that started with EPA money, and they're doing all sorts of different grants related and unrelated in this basically environmental job training types of programs. So the idea is to get started as the program progresses, and this program has been going from 1987 or so, or 1990. So it's a very mature program. It's not well funded. It's only been traditionally about $3 million a year. All the money goes out. Whatever money they get, they send out. Now we come to this last year with the Build Act. The Build Act, they had to do some negotiating, and they said, we're going to do something a little different. We're going to, rather than having an annual competition and issue 10 grants to 20 grants, we're going to do biannual. So every other year, we're going to have an RFP. These grants are 3 years in length. Generally, once you get the grant, you spend about a quarter to half year getting your program running. You have two power years where you're in the middle of graduating, training, placing people, and then you've got another half year of kind of ramp down, getting ready to apply for another grant, perhaps consolidating your partners, leveraging your program. So while the whole grant is 3 years, you've got two power years of training that you're really going to it, and on either side you're building your program or you're looking at sustainability on the back end. So these are $200,000 over 3 years. They used to be annual. Now they're not going to be annual unless things change. There may be more competition when we think about it, because everyone in each competition, everyone can apply or reapply. It used to be you'd have to sit out for a year, but now everyone will be able to apply. So let's look forward to February or March. During this transition, they decided, okay, we're going to switch from every year to every other year. Let's skip the RFP we usually send out in November, and let's make it in February, and then we'll start this cycle. So this, when we look forward to February, we'll have those grantees who need to re-up or want to re-up to get more funding, and we'll have new grantees. So intuitively, it's kind of leading you to believe we're going to probably have more competition, but we're not sure yet. We may have more grants awarded, so we're not sure yet of how much money is being appropriated into this program. If they have double the number, if they go from 20 to 40, that'd be great. I don't know. We don't. There's just many unknowns at this point. What we do know is it appears this is going to be launched in the next month, and then and the idea is the training will, the awards, the actual being able to write checks will occur in October, after October 1st of next year, and there'll be training going on. You'll be planning next fall, and then you'll be training into the spring of the following year. So that's kind of how this is looking. We're expecting some pretty good competition. Now, for those of you who are new and they're saying, how do I compete with these guys that have been doing it for 15 years or 10 years or even 5 years? They usually try to get about half new and about half re-ups. So we do have this mix. So if you're new at this, don't write it off. I think you have a good shot, as good as anyone. They're always trying to get new grantees into the program. So the way it's graded, we'll be talking about later, but there is special circumstances, and there's often a little bit of a bias for new grantees. So if you're new to this program, I would say stick with it as we go along and see if it might work for you. Are there any questions of where I've gone this far? to give you a little schedule, which we always try to keep, there's always people tuning in and tuning out. If we look at an anticipated RFP in February, and we're not sure whether the shutdown is going to delay it or it'll be on schedule, but if it goes in February, you've got 60 days to write your proposal. So that's 2 months. So February, March, April, they'll be due in the April, May timeframe. The awards, they take 60 to 90 days to evaluate them. So that's putting the awards this summer, July, August. Once you're awarded in the summer, and this is different than those of you who have gotten these before, the July, August awards will then morph into work plans. Once you've got the award, you're going to have to sit down and negotiate with EPA, and this is our work plan. And as we go along in these PLCs, you're going to see that your proposal is almost your work plan. I mean, these grants are different in many grants in that you have to have your program pretty well spelled out when you send in your grant application. They're very specific, and we'll be talking about that later in this PLC program. So the work plans will be done in the summer, August, September, and then when the new fiscal year, federal fiscal year, occurs in October 1st, they'll be able to start writing checks and authority to spend money. So we're sitting here now, really we'll be talking about training a year from now, really. You'll be training, you'll be planning, you're finalizing your courses in October, November, starting some training in November, December for placement in the spring, which is usually the typical hiring cycle. Evelyn, is that pretty much how you all do it in Santa Fe, to have winter training?
I think she had planned originally to do the first two trainings, one in early in January, and then we did the last one in September. And then the third cohort, which is our last cohort, will begin in May in Española, New Mexico.
Okay. So
she kind of scattered it around a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting because you've had a lot of experience in that. And it also depends if you're in Minnesota versus being in Santa Fe, New Mexico, where your climate and when your hiring patterns are. So much really depends on your employers. And we're going to be talking about labor market assessment, which is really key to this. As a matter of fact, as we go forward every other week, we'll be talking about, we call them eight critical issues. And the first one is labor market assessment, which drives your whole program and how you assess what you need, where you're going to place it. It kind of drives everything. And as Evelyn said, they may start off one way and then see when their employers are basically in their hiring cycle and coincide so that when their graduates are finishing up, it'll be just before the employers start looking for people. And that's kind of the way you want to time this thing. What should you be doing now? And I'm going to make this quick because we try to limit these to 30 minutes. That doesn't take up too much of your time. But between now and next week and the week after, when we will know more about these RFPs, what should you be doing? And I would concentrate on your team. I'm not talking about getting too much into the weeds in terms of responding to the proposal. What is your team going to look like? And we like to think about who do you need on your team? You need, and these may be the same people or they may be different people, but you've got to have people, one, with administrative skills. You've got to have someone who can handle the administrative part of this because it is major, whether it's quarterly progress reports, whether it's financial. As a matter of fact, it might be critical in terms of teaming up with someone who has submitted federal grants, who has experience working with grants.gov. So you need this administrative person on your team. That also morphs into a really good grant writer. I hate to say it, but I've seen so many really good programs that I know are good, and they do great jobs, and they can't get the grant, or they don't get re-upped. And there's one reason is they can't sufficiently describe what they're doing in words. And the only thing the evaluators have to go by is what's written on that paper. And if it's not concise and to the point and done properly, you don't have a chance. And so it's one thing I really don't like about grants is what you are, is what's on that paper. So when you're thinking right now of putting together your team or bringing in new talent or whatever, think about a good grant writer, a good administrator. Interestingly enough, you need a good techie person. You would think this is all about technology and training, but it's really almost about everything else. And the training is critical, but you need someone on your team who knows, that could walk around OSHA, knows courses, knows how to talk to trainers, knows basic regulations. So they're going to be the technical people that are going to help the grant writer put their words on paper. They're basically the project manager. They're the ones that know and guide all of the other aspects of your team. You need also a partnership person. This is someone who can go out, and again, we'll be talking about this later, connect with the WIBs, connect with government, it goes out and builds your leveraging. Someone who is really out there, doesn't really have to be technical at all, but has to be good at developing relationships for leveraging. Another person that you have to consider on this team is an outreach person, because so much of this has to do with outreach to the community. Could be a community organizer. That person can be community organizer, but you're also going to need a job developer, someone who can work with your employers. So right now, think about this team, and if you're new, start thinking about who in your organization or who you could partner with to get these skills that you're going to need to write this grant the way it needs to be written. And there's nothing wrong with partnering. In fact, government agencies will say, if you feel like you're lacking in one of these things, partner with someone, and we'll be talking about partnerships, but find someone who may have experience in these areas, who may have training experience, someone who has grant experience, someone who's had federal grants, and think about who you might do and kind of do a scan of your community and see what organizations. There might be a workforce investment board, and you may partner with them. They may be the fiscal agent, and you may be working with them and running this program. So don't feel that you have to have all these skills, and don't feel that you really even have to be the fiscal agent or run the program. You can partner with these people, and it could be your program, and you're guiding it along, but they're providing certain critical attributes that you need to get this grant. Later on, after we start talking more about writing this grant, you'll need to think about who's going to be doing your training and your advisory committees and all of the other things. But I'd say at this point in this whole process, think in general terms, think about your team, who you can get. And as we go forward, you're going to be having some team meetings and you're going to be getting close and you're going to be identifying what are we lacking here to walk through this grant and to implement it. And so while we have this little bit of time before we have to start rushing or going full speed on writing this grant, we can start organizing and keeping it flexible. And I always tell people, when you approach these people, there's always a reluctance because you don't have the grant yet. But the way you approach people is say, we would like to go after this program, or we have this program and we'd like to improve it to strengthen our chances of getting refunded. And I think you've got some things that we can do with you or you could work with us on, or we could work for you that will strengthen this program. Would you be interested in working with us on this type of project and find out those skills that they can bring to the program and decide maybe they should be submitting the grant and you're bringing certain attributes and they're providing other ones. And those are the overall things you've got to do. You may want to partner with Salvation Army or Youth Corps or a Workforce Investment Board or a city, because the cities have grant experience. So you may be a nonprofit, but you don't have that grant experience. You may go to the city and city hall and talk to them about doing partnering with them, even though you'd run the program. So, well, I am over and talk too much as usual. But does anyone have any questions about where we're at now or what this program, what you could expect from this program at this point?
This is Madeline from NICC. Mm-hmm. We've actually been considering applying for this grant for several years now. But the thing that always stops our momentum, because we have support of the city government, we have support of the workforce board, obviously we're the college, we're just providing the training, is that we're having trouble, despite the labor need, of getting employers to sign because they're afraid of those commitment letters that we keep hearing are so important for hiring.
Yep.
Does anyone have any tips as to what is the best way to get them to commit to the program?
I'll suggest one thing and others could add to that. We suggest that it's a commitment letter, but a commitment to look at graduates. That two words is all the difference in the world. And the way you want to approach employers is say, this is what our program is going to look like. We do want to see that there is a need in our community. Would you be interested in looking at our graduates? They're going to have these credentials. They're going to have 1910, 120. They may have confined space. They may have asbestos, lead. They're going to have these. We would like to bring you into the program to be a guest speaker and to get to know our graduates. Then you hit them with the keyword. Would you be interested in looking at our students, for considering our students? So that's not saying how many people. Now, that has been done. Rochester got, the way they did it was they worked with the purchasing department in Rochester, and they got all the purchasing managers that had to do with the rehabilitation and demolition and reconstruction and said, you know, we would like you to make some sort of a commitment to look at our students. How many students do you think you might be able to consider? And then they went around the room and they ended up overbooking their graduate class. So that's what I would suggest. Anything else that people have used out there? But remember, nobody knows exactly what economic conditions are going to be. So, and I would approach the same thing when you're doing leveraging partners. And I would also do the same thing when you're talking about City Hall. When you go to City Hall, always hear the word, we are considering doing this. If we get the grant, we would like you to work with us. We're not sure if we're going to get the grant. There's nothing wrong with that. In fact, I'm going to go a step further in another PLC. It's best to get your contract. You've got to get three bids. And if you want to include a contract, what you need to do is do a competition now, before you even start. And in that RFP that you're going to issue, say you're going to have a trainer, a private sector training consultant. He's not going to be a partner. He's going to be a private sector training consultant. We want someone to deliver this training. We'd like a bid, and this is about what the training would look like if we get the funding. And always put those conditions in, and you'll be all right. You're covered. Plus, you'll be able to use them in your grant proposal. So I don't know if that'll help, but always use those conditional things. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. No, I had a question. This is Marlo from West End. So I just wanted to just recap what we discussed, you know, some of the stuff. So the launch for this new grant is coming out in February next month, correct?
Correct.
And then, so we'll start working on our proposal, and so by July or August, we should have our proposal ready and to submit?
If they come out in February, you're going to have to send in your proposal about April, May. And this depends on the shutdown, of course. But if it comes out in February, March, that means April, May, you get 60 days to write your proposal. We hope on this PLC that you're going to be well prepared to do that. In fact, we'll probably have a webinar that it'll fine-tune your proposal. So we're going to be working on that in the March, February, March, April time, they need about 60 to 90 days to review your proposal. So you'll know if you got the money by August. So that's the time schedule. The money will probably, then you start negotiating your work plan, and then the money will start to flow after October. It can't, they can't award the money before October 1st. So October to November is when you can actually get to work. So that's kind of your time schedule. Now, everything I've said could get blown out of the water. You know, where the environment we're living in is crazy, but that's the way, from what we've heard, appears to be the way this is happening.
Did you say the name of the grant? Because maybe I missed that.
It's the Environmental Workforce Development and Job Training Program. They usually refer to it as the Environmental Workforce Development and Job Training RFP, Request for Proposals. We'll be, and you don't have to worry about missing an announcement. We'll send everyone notices as soon as we hear. In fact, we may hear for it before it's been posted, and we'll let everyone know when that'll happen.
And what's different about this grant is we don't have to apply for it every year. It'll be every other year?
It'll be, it looks like right now it's going to be every other year, and it'll be the duration of the grant is 3 years.
Oh, okay.
So you can, now you can apply, this is the way it's being planned. This is the first time they're doing this new schedule, but the thinking would be every other year they'll send out an RFP, and you can apply every other year for a new, for a re-up. And we've got two types of grantees. We've got some, we've got a grantee that's been maybe re-upped for 15 years, 15 times, for 15 years, I'm sorry. Not 15 times, but he's been re-upped there, so outstanding. And then we've got new ones. So I wouldn't be intimidated to think that you're competing with some very experienced people, because they do want continually new grantees coming in. So what I would do is, and this is self-serving, but stick on these calls and see if as you go along you think this is something you can do, I would go for it. If it's something that you say, I don't want to get into this, and this happens too, this is way over our heads at this point, or we're not ready right now, like we were just talking about it. Some people have talked about this application for quite a while, and they're just not ready yet.
Okay.
And that's okay. You know, that's okay.
And Mike, I do want to encourage new people that are just looking into checking out this grant opportunity, really do remember to go to the Brownfields Toolbox, brownfields-toolbox.org, and check out the Start a Program section. It really does. We've kind of captured the in-depth processes and things that you might have to go through and kind of take a look at. So it's a nice summary to sort of get you thinking in the right direction.
Okay, thank you. That was helpful.
Yeah. One quick thing. In terms of your competition, now this may all change this year, but there might be 50 grants and they'll award 18 out of 50. So let's say, 3-1. You've got to be better than three other grants, something like that. But again, we're going to walk you through that, because there'll be a lot of people who, in the last month, they decide we're going to write a grant. And they send it to their grant writer, and they don't have a chance.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to make sure, because I was taking some information down, so I could share it with my team. And you said the amount of their award is $200,000?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
I wanted to make sure. So if you get awarded a grant in October of 2019, and it's for every other year, the next year that you would need to re-up or to reapply would be 20?
Well, if they go per schedule, it would be February of 19, 20, 21, right? February, unless they change something, 2 years later from when they request a new proposal. So if they request a proposal of February of 2019, so they'll skip 2020, and then it'll be February of 2021. This is all up in the air, depending on money, you know, appropriations and EPA.
Okay.
Looking at it from the way we see it now, one thing we didn't mention is we have no connection to EPA. So if you want to badmouth EPA or complain or compliment or have questions, direct them to me and Heather, because we're kind of this intermediary. And you've got EPA headquarters and you've got regional coordinators, and they're your best friends. We'll talk about this at a later date, but they're your best friends, but they're still our EPA. So if you, and we never identify questions when they come through us. So we're kind of we're an advocate for the grantees, basically. And of course, we're supported by EPA. We're funded by EPA, but we have to compete. It's a separate funding. It's completely outside this program where we've been competing for to do what we do. And we've been doing it for 20 years. So hopefully we'll continue.
Okay. Thank you. That was very helpful.
Mm-hmm. Anything else? I'm sorry I took 15 more minutes than I was supposed to, but... Well, if there's no other questions, tune us in 2 weeks, the 30th of January, and we'll start talking in more detail about this. So y'all have a good week or two.
You too.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you. Mm-hmm.